Hello and welcome to the UK Gamers Podcast. Right, well, just a few updates from my previous show. Not too much has been going on, but I'm very interested to see that some rumours about a release date have started to emerge for Wings of Glory. What's slightly worrying, though, is that the rumours are saying it's likely to be January or February for the bombers to be released. The four bomber pictures I've seen are looking really nice, particularly what I believe are the nighttime camo patterns, but I am a little bit concerned that they're going to miss out on the Christmas rush, so let's hope something happens on that real soon. Essen's obviously getting ever closer and starting to get quite excited by that. I'm really looking forward to seeing De Profundis for Claustrophobia, the expansion. I'm hoping that's going to be at Essen. So hopefully Board Game Geek will get some online coverage of that. But there's not really been too much else going on. Now, with regard to ASL, obviously make sure you get your order in for the action pack. It's getting pretty close to the pre-order number now, and the new action pack for Rome looks pretty good with obviously the new maps. It does seem to require lots of the modules though, so that is a little bit of a downside. Anyway, the reason I'm putting this show out quite quickly is my ASL coverage was fairly weak and just a general overview. So what I'm actually going to do is I've just received a new product from MMP. So I'm going to do a live unboxing and also run through the various bits and pieces. And what is the thing I've received? It's ASL Starter Kit Expansion 1, or effectively Starter Kit 4. So right after the break, that's what I'll be doing. So no real news from last show, so catch you in a second. Cheers then. Hello and welcome back. Right, well, I've got in my hand a first-class international postage envelope, which has seen better days. I think the postman might have tried to shove it through my letterbox, realised that it wasn't going to go, and thankfully I had to go and collect it. But the top corner's pretty badly ripped. Let's hope the product inside is not badly damaged. Right, so I don't really need to do much to get the envelope open, because it's pretty much open already. What have we got inside? Ah, well, we've got two little games. I like these little postcard games. Oh, that one's a bit damaged. What have we got here? A Dash of Piper and the Bagged Piper. Nice little postcard-sized games. Have a look at those a bit later. Nice little extra touch that MMP does. Right, let's get this wrapper off. Right. That's that done. Okay, so inside, no dice, obviously. One thing that is a little bit disappointing about this product is it's not a full-on starter kit, but never mind. Oh, dropped it. Let's pick that up. My invoice, $41, effectively, which is postage and packaging. I think that's just about £30, so not that much cheaper than if I'd bought it from a UK vendor by the time you've paid postage, but yeah, I think it's £29 plus postage from a lot of the UK guys. Right, well, I've got my little green slip from MMP here telling me what's in the box. And basically, counter sheets, map boards, scenarios, cover sheets, rule book, chapter H, and player aid cards. So, let's see. So, fairly nice, simple little external package, which for the front cover, they've actually made the inside of that the two-hit chart. Now, I've read somewhere that the two-hit chart is not a complete two-hit chart. It only includes the two-hit charts for the actual stuff that you get in the product. Now, let's find the back sheet. Where's, oh, dear, it's all over the place. Right. On the back sheet, we've got to-hit dice roll modifiers, red to-hit numbers, and bits and pieces there. So, obviously, those are two fairly important sheets. Don't want to lose them. Maps. We've got some nice-looking maps here. New starter kit style, obviously. We've got Q, R, and S. Q, it's got a little bit of hill and quite a lot of forest and lots of wooden buildings. Yeah, no stone buildings at all on that. It's quite a nice little map. Map S, lots of kind of orchard hexes, a few wooden buildings and lots of stone buildings. Quite a nice little urban environment with lots of hindrance and stuff. So I can see that being quite a fun little map. What's this one here? Ah, oh, okay. Lots and lots of wooden buildings and a few stone buildings, including a nice kind of square building with a hollow centre, a few orchard hexes, and that's about it. Well, I'd say map Q is sort of a wilderness with the odd building. S is quite a dense little kind of city or townscape. And R, I guess, is kind of a villagey thing with all those wooden buildings. A little bit of cover, but obviously not as good as your stone buildings. Let's put them down there. Right, I've got a quick starter reference data card, which has some nice little bits and pieces on. Looks very similar to your standard starter kits. Now, I believe you're meant to have two of those. And yes, here you go. Here's another one, which is ASL Starter Kit Quick Reference Data Card number 2. So it is very important if you've got this product that you get Data Card 1 and Data Card 2. I believe some kits went out with two of just one data card rather than two different data cards. Right, now these maps and dice, let's get them out of the way. Counter sheets. Right, well, this is interesting. On this, we've got Americans, Commonwealth, Axis Miners, Allied Miners. So, Axis and Allied Miners. And then, it doesn't actually tell you what they are, but they're almost certainly Italians, judging by the names. And also, they look slightly Italian to me. And looking at the tanks, yes, they are Italian. Right, and the tanks got a nice little selection. Comet, rather nice. Matilda 1 and 2. Jagdpanzer, oh dear, that's going to be scary. SU-122, and a load of other stuff. And oh, some nice little armoured cars, and one of those weird Italian tank destroyer things. Some Mavente, or whatever they're called. Nice little counter mix there. It's going to really help play a lot of scenarios for the full ASL. Okay, so here's my scenario sheets. Have I got all of them? Yeah, so S... what have we got? S44 through to S51. A nice little mix here across the border in Poland, 39. Contested settlement, Poland, 39, but that's 2 days later. Where the winter lingers, S46 in Finland in 42. Nice bit of winter war there. Not so deposed, Sicily in 43, bit of Italian action there. Convergent assaults in Sicily, 43. Cooks, clerks and bazookas in France, 44. And that's, is that Americans? Yeah, Americans versus Germans. N463 in France, 44. And that's, Free French by the looks of it. And Enter the Young, which is Germany in 44, which is Americans. So, what have we got? We've got Polish. Is it? Okay. Oh, I see. Axis Minor and Allied Minor versus each other. So that's those two. Germans and Russians. Italians and Americans. Americans and Italians. Americans and Germans. And they must be Free French. Yeah, Free French versus Germans. And Germans versus Americans. So although we've got a load of British counters, they're not being used as British. They're being used, obviously, as Free French or something like that. That sort of falls in line with one of my gripes about Croix de Guerre from the full rule set, that it didn't actually include a full order of battle. Right, we then got the latest starter kit rule book, which is nice and thick, because obviously it contains all the rules that we need for starter kit for tanks and infantry and everything. 28 pages, so although ASL is quite complex, starter kit, you know, you pretty much got all the rules you need in 28 pages, apart from concealment and a couple of extra bits that would be nice. Maybe they will actually risk bringing out another starter kit that introduces those rules. Who knows? Maybe not. And what's this? Vehicle and Ordnance Historical Notes. Well, this is basically Chapter H. Some nice little information. For example, the Jagdpanzer 5 here. And what it's got to say about it is, with its gun, armor, and speed, the Jag Panther was one of the most potent tank destroyers of the war. Its greatest drawback was its rarity. Only 390 were built. Use of the Jag Panther in Normandy was limited to 12 to 14 vehicles of the 2nd Company. And I'm going to totally mash this up. Schwer Panzerjäger Ablingtung 654. Totally mispronounced that, I assume. So yeah, nice little note there, and there's a bit about move in and how it might stall or whatever. So nice to see there's some horrible little rules there to catch out with your big beastie that destroys most things. And then obviously a load of notes about the Russians and the Americans and everyone else. And here you go, got to read out the Comet. This is the last of the cruiser tanks. Was originally envisioned as being merely an improved Cromwell, but ultimately became an almost total redesign. The Comet's gun, officially called the 77mm, was actually a less powerful version of the 17-pounder. This seemingly retrograde step was taken to ensure the gun would not overstress the vehicle, as had been the case with the Challenger. Though it was planned to have the Comet replaced the Cromwell in 1944, development and testing took longer than expected, and it did not enter combat until after crossing of the Rhine. And it goes on with some other information there. So yeah, nice little booklet there, and some nice bit about the Italians and Slovakian. Okay, so it's a Slovakian armoured car, an OAVZ-30T, whatever that is. Tatra, okay. Yeah, nice. And then the back page here, page 7 and 8 of the chapter H. Page 7 is the nationality chart, which I guess is for your ELR. So when you get a certain result, you're going to be reduced, and it shows you the progression. This table I always find a little bit annoying. It's not as clear as it should be, in my opinion. Instead of having arrows, it has stars and things. So my understanding is if you have to ELR, or whatever it is, reduction, a 667, it becomes a 666, and then a 546, and then a 536. So that's my understanding of how it downgrades. So please correct me if I've got that wrong, because I've been teaching people that wrong. Now, the back page, I'm glad to say, is an ASL starter kit sequence of play. So gives you quite a nice run-through of everything there. I might come back to that. Now, the rule book is nicely laid out. It's got some highlights to show you what's new from previous rule kits. I have heard that not all the errata was actually caught. I think it was the diagrams more than the text where there was a problem. This is a little bit of a shame, because I believe the actual beta testers and everything, which I believe includes Jay Richardson and so on, they actually did catch all this errata, and there was a version of the document that was errata-free, but somehow I think some bits have come in. I think if you go check out Board Game Geek, there's a discussion about what is and isn't missing, and I assume ConSim World and all that probably has a discussion about it as well. Now, the game rulebook obviously gives you an introduction, telling you all about the rules, and then it goes on to do various other bits and pieces. So I'm just going to give you a quick skim of that. So after the introduction, you've got a game components section, which talks about the map boards and how to find things on the map board, and then the different train types. And basically in starter kit, you've got open ground, buildings, which can be wood or stone, roads, woods, which can also include a woods with road, orchard, which can also include a road, grain, brush, which to me looks more like a swamp, but apparently it's brush, and then hills. Now, I think there are less levels of hills in starter kit compared to the full rules, and a lot more simplification. It then goes on to talk about the counters. So it talks about leader counters, multi-man counters, and the half-squad counters as well. So you've got your single-man counters, which are basically your leaders, and then your multi-man counters, which can be squads or half-squads, and it discusses the various bits. Now, what is interesting is there's only really one element on the multi-man counters that isn't used, and that's the underline range, which I believe stands for spray and fire. And all the other bits, as far as I can tell from the full rules, are basically still in use in starter kit. So you get assault fire, smoke, range, morale with no ELR. So some units don't get ELR'd because they're good. Obviously, then goes on to talk about support weapons and rate of fire, smoke, guns, vehicles, scenario cards and dice. Now, obviously, dice aren't included with this, but that shouldn't be a problem. You just need two dice, one white and one coloured, really, to be honest, or two easily identified dice. There's then a nice bit about definitions, which includes various things, and like, you know, AAMG, which stands for anti-aircraft machine gun. And then a whole load of other bits and pieces. And this is one of my criticisms of ASL. It loves its little TLAs, you know, your three-letter acronyms, although they're often longer than that. And in the rule book, it might mention what they are once, but it then never repeats them, which obviously keeps the rule density down. But it does make it hard to read a sentence when it says stuff like FFMO. And you're thinking, what is FFMO? Well, if you go back to this definition, you'll realise it's first fire movement in open ground. But, you know, when you're reading in a sentence, you know, this unit will be subject to FFMO, you have to have a think about it, which is the only downside and makes the rules seem a lot more complex than they are. I guess once you kind of grok all these little weird abbreviations, the rules become a lot easier to remember. And some of them make sense, I guess, like LATW, well, that stands for light anti-tank weapon, and that's basically like your Piats and your bazookas and stuff. And that goes on for quite a while. I have to say, it's probably two and a half, almost three pages of bits and pieces. Now, obviously, not all of them are little shortened shorthand bits. For example, one of the entries in definitions is motion status attempt, and obviously it tells you a little bit about what that is, and then it tells you if you want to read about that, have a look in section 3.3.2.1. So yeah, it's quite a good little introduction there, and I do find when I'm reading these rules, I find them really easy to kind of read and think I know how to play. However, the rule book I find's not so good when I'm actually playing and I need to look something up, and that's where the full ASL rule book is a little bit better, because you get a really good index and everything. It then goes on to the sequence of play, going through the various phases and what you can do, and like, for example, in the shooting effect, what a KIA means, what a K hash means, what a NMC means, a hash MC and a PTC. So there's a whole load of stuff in there for you to get your head round. And there's a load of examples here, which are looking pretty good, and telling you about markers. Then it goes into tanks and all that stuff and movement. And yeah, it's lots of really good stuff there. So I'm going to come back to that, because I'm going to be looking at the sequence of play. A little bit further on, it then goes on to talk about, in Section 4, weapons and support weapons. And you've basically got your machine gun, your flamethrower, your demolition charge, your anti-tank weapons, your infantry portable jobbies. It also then talks a bit about backblast and into even more detail on anti-tank rifles, Piats, mortars, and so on. Then there's a little bit about ELR, Section 5, which stands for experience level rating. And it basically tells you each force in each scenario would be given a specific number of leaders and green units and all that stuff. And it also will have an ELR. And it's basically if you fail your morale check by more than its ELR rating, then it becomes broken but is reduced in quality. And that's that little reference chart I was talking about earlier. It's then talking about some various bits like field promotions, inexperienced units, captured equipment, ordnance, which is Section 6, so that's your guns and your anti-tank guns and all that stuff, and also mortars. Then Section 7 is vehicles, so mostly tanks, but you know, also potentially trucks and all that good stuff. And that's a fairly lengthy section as well, and that pretty much takes you to the end of the rule book. So it's quite a lot in there, and from what I've been saying, if you haven't played Advanced Squad League, you might be thinking, oh, that sounds a little bit complex. And yeah, it's not simple, but it's not as hard as maybe you would think. Now, if we take the sequence of play, you have the rally phase, and that's the first thing you do. And in that, you get to rally your troops and so on. Now, if you actually follow the rally phase correctly, which is Section 3.1, you roll for reinforcements if you're required to. Good order units can recover guns, which they're in the same hex as. So, you know, if a gun's been abandoned or whatever, you can pick it up. Good order units can attempt to repair broken weapons. So weapons that have jammed and been flipped to their damaged side, you can attempt to repair them. Potentially, when you're repairing weapons, they can actually break permanently, of course, which isn't so amusing. And good order units can, you know, say, here, I don't need this machine gun anymore, you have it, and pass it off to another good order unit in the same hex as it. You can then do what's known as a self-rally, where you're allowed to pick one unit and attempt to rally it, and you get a plus one on that. Now, in ASL, pluses tend to be bad, and minuses tend to be good. You may then attempt to rally any broken unit, which is with a leader who's not broken. You then do vehicle shock rolls and remove desperation morale counters, unless enemy units prevent you from doing so. So that's quite good. They have actually put, I think, in here... Oh, no, they haven't. I believe you can, in the full rules, choose to stay in desperation morale. I'll have to look in the rule book and see if they've clarified that. But I believe in starter kit you can choose to stay in desperation morale and keep routing. So that's a rally phrase, and that's the first thing you do. Now, if you've never played the game before, that can come as a bit of a shock, because obviously you're thinking, well, I don't understand what all of this is about. But it's all pretty easy in actual play, I tend to find. You've then got the prep fire phase. Now, this is where the attacker chooses, rather than move, to kind of lay down covering fire. And it seems like a good idea, but often with scenarios, you've got to get to a point in a certain limited time. And if you're standing still shooting, you're not going to have enough time to cover the ground to take your objective. So it can be a little bit dangerous to prep fire. However, having said that, occasionally you are going to have to do that. Now, in the prep fire phase, you can choose to fire, obviously. But before you do that, you've got to remove smoke that's dispersed. And any smoke that's currently in play flips over to the dispersed side. So you remove your dispersed stuff and then flip all your non-dispersed stuff. You can then choose to fire smoke from your guns, and then units can choose to shoot, and they get marked with a prep fire marker. And let's see, change covered arc of guns able to fire without using intensive fire. So you can actually rotate your gun as well, so it's pointing in the direction you need it to go. So a little bit to do there. And that's prep fire phase, is known as the PFPH, prep fire phase. Fairly obvious when you know what it's talking about. Now the next phase, section 3.3, is the movement phase. And in this phase, the attacker does stuff, but the defender has the ability to react. And it's very important you remember that. So the attacker, if it's not marked with CX, which I'm not sure why it is CX, because it's basically like double timing. I think it's counter-exhaustion is what it actually stands for. If not marked counter-exhaustion, you can double time. You place a CX marker on it and you can move it. And obviously you should remove CX counters from units that are CX from prior turns. You can declare an assault move, which is basically a way of keeping your head down so you don't get shot up. Or hopefully don't get shot up. And then you can move any unit that's not marked with prep fire. Now, when you go to move, there's certain movement factors, which I won't go into, but single-man counters and multi-man counters have different movement rates, and they get plus two if they're double-timing, and they get minus costs if they're carrying lots of heavy stuff, because obviously it slows them down. They can drop their weapons if they want to, and they can place smoke as part of their movement, which is good. However, by placing smoke, that counts as spending movement points. Now, whenever you spend movement points, i.e. move a hex or drop smoke, then that potentially allows the enemy to react. Now, vehicle movement, you've got to decide whether you want to be crew exposed or buttoned up. And if it's not currently moving or in motion, you actually have to spend points just to fire up the engine. And some vehicles, when you attempt to fire up the engine, can have a problem. Armed vehicles that are bogged in rough terrain and having trouble moving can try and attempt to remove that, and they must do that if they're trying to move. You can't move if you're bogged down. And again, there's various bits and pieces about what that is. And you can change your vehicle covered arc, which costs movement points as well. So you might decide, well, that anti-tank gun, I'd rather it was shooting my front armor rather than my side armor, so I'll rotate to present my front towards it. And obviously, vehicles that go into woods or buildings potentially can bog down and get all caught up, so that will require what's known as a bog check. And there's a whole load of other bits there. Now, what's interesting is vehicles can attempt to do this thing called bounding fire. Now, traditionally, most World War II vehicles had to stop to fire. They could fire on the move, but it wasn't particularly effective because they didn't have stabilization and the shell could go anywhere. But there is an option here to do bounding first fire, and I believe there are some vehicles that towards the end of World War II did have gyro stabilizers, fairly primitive and are slightly more accurate when moving and firing. Let's have a look. Here you go. And the real gotcha here is vehicles must expend the full MP, which is movement point allowance. All remaining MPs are assumed to be used in the last hex. So if you've got, let's say, 10 movement points on your vehicle and you move one hex at the cost of, let's say, 2 points, well, because you didn't use the others, you can actually be assumed to have spent 8 points in that hex, which means potentially you can be shot at 8 times, if I recall correctly. Now, any vehicle that doesn't spend a movement point to actually physically stop is assumed to still be in motion, and that has some significance in other phases. Now, during any of the movement phase, the defender may resolve firepower attacks from what's known as residual firepower. So if I shoot into a hex, you actually leave a marker there to show that there's still bullets going into that hex. Because although we do everything in a very stylized, we do this, we do this, we do this, ASL assumes the turn is fairly simultaneous. So if I shoot a load of machine gun fire into a hex, you leave basically half your firepower as residual fire, and anyone moving into that hex will be attacked by that residual fire. They may also conduct offensive first fire against moving units. They may also do subsequent first fire, final protective fire, and, if unpinned, reaction fire. And there's a whole load of stuff there. Let's have a look. There's a few bits there, which I won't really go into. And then right at the end of that phase, you remove all residual firepower and small smoke grenades. They don't disperse. They appear, they clog up stuff, and then disappear. Right. Ooh, if more than one armoured fighting vehicle in hex, defender turns excess into Rex. Ooh, I have to read up that. Haven't done too much with tanks, I have to say. So that's the section I'm going to need to look at. That's going to be, I assume, somewhere in 3.3. So that would be one for me to look up. Now, the defensive fire phase is a phase that occurs after the movement phase. And that confused me at first when I first read it. But that's section 3.4. That allows you to fire ordnance with what's known as dispersed smoke. So it's not the full smoke, but dispersed smoke. They may also conduct defensive fire. And any units that are not already marked may fire and use rate of fire if it's maintained. So a lot of machine guns, depending on the dice you roll, if you roll a certain number on the dice, your machine guns assume to be out of ammo or the barrel's got too hot. But if you maintain this thing called rate of fire, you can just keep shooting, which can be quite devastating. You can destroy your guns, you can change the covered arc of your gun, and then right at the end of that, you remove all, basically, the fire markers. Now, the attacker then gets a fire phase. So they've got two fire phases, the prep fire phase, where they shoot and then that unit can't move. But in the advancing fire phase, all the units that have moved can potentially fire on the move. And this isn't as effective as firing in the prep fire phase, but sometimes is a better option. And basically, they can do some shooting and hopefully, you know, see some people off. Now, after you've done the advancing fire phase, you have the rout phase. Now, in the rout phase, you basically do the attacker and then the defender. And what you have to do is you have to check for broken units that are going to become Desperation Morale. So basically they get a counter, having been flipped over to show that they're in Desperation Morale. They then must rout. Now when they rout, they need to rout in under certain parameters, and if they can't rout, then basically they get wiped out, which isn't good news for them. Now, rout units that aren't in melee can run away, and they can have potentially problems. And if they can't rout, as it says here, units must rout and are eliminated if they cannot. Unpinned leaders may voluntarily rout with a broken unit, so they can choose to go off with it. And then there's this thing called interdiction, which is basically when you're routing, if you're just running, you're going to get shot up and get casualty reduction. However, you can do this thing called low crawl, which means that's not possible. But obviously, sometimes you can't low crawl, and unfortunately, someone can draw a line of sight on you, and they just assume to gun you down in the back and kill you off. And that can be very nasty. So there you go. So that's section 3.6, the rout phase. You then get to the advance phase. Now, this is where the attacker gets to move again. You're thinking, move again? That's horrendous. They can move, but only one hex. And so typically what you do is you run up next to an enemy, you hope you survive, pump a load of bullets into them in the advance and fire phase, hopefully they rout away, and then you advance into the building. That's your objective. Turn ends, and you've won the game. Doesn't always go like that, of course. Now, the advance phase, you can transfer your guns again, and you can move your good order unpinned units one hex, including into enemy-occupied hexes. And the reason for that is the next phase is close combat. And there's a whole load of bits and pieces you need to worry about in there. Now, in the close combat phase, you check to see if you're ambushed. So, obviously, if you sneak into a wood or a building, potentially you can be ambushed and they get to attack first. You then do your close combat, and with AVFs, you then declare your close combat attacks, with the attacker going first, unless, of course, ambush has occurred. You resolve your close combat, and then the close combat counter gets flip to melee, so if you don't actually manage to kill each other off, you're kind of locked in combat. And then at the end, it's the turn record chart, so you flip the turn marker for the other player to have their go. They go through all that phase with the rally phase, prep fire, movement phase, defensive fire, advancing fire, rout phase, advance phase, close combat, and then that ends the turn and you move it to the next turn. And a lot of scenarios have a limited number of turns. So, for example, let's grab scenario 44 here, S44. You've got turn 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and then it ends. Now, it's also got a little marker here, which means that potentially one of the players doesn't get their go, if I remember correctly, without looking up the rules. And you think about it, 5 turns might not be very long, depending on where you've got to get from. Now, looking at this, victory conditions, very important. Make sure you read these and understand these. So the Slovakians win the game by amassing 6 victory points, and these following buildings are worth 2 victory points, so you need to get 3 of those buildings. And you can also get victory points by exiting some armoured cars, but you only get 1 victory point for that. So you've got 4 armoured cars, so you're going to have to get at least 4 cars off and 1 building, or all 3 buildings and not worry about your armoured cars by the looks of it. Now, if you don't meet those victory conditions, the Slovakians do not win, and that means the other side wins. Now, the action report here is quite nice. You get a little bit of historical note about what's sort of going on in Poland on the 3rd of September 1939, and then obviously you play the scenario to try and see how you do under that kind of circumstances, and then the aftermath tells you sort of what actually happened. So let's have a look. The aftermath of this historically was that the Slovakians entered the Carpathian town of Tyslsklik, oh dear, I can't even pronounce that, I won't even attempt that again, with little resistance. The town was garrisoned by a variety of soldiers loosely subordinated to Armia Carpata. Oh dear, apologies for our overseas listeners whose language I'm destroying, including well-trained frontier troops, national guardsmen, reservists, policemen, and other civil servants. The Slovakian armoured cars set up in the town centre, waited for the dismounted cavalry to follow up, However, before they could make an appearance, Polish defenders damaged the cars. Slovakians called it a day and retreated to return once hostilities ended as an occupying force. So that's what I like about ASL as well. They try and get a nice little bit of accurate history in to the kind of the setup of why are you doing this scenario and what actually happened. Now, there are sometimes special rules, and there is here. There's three special rules. Now, sometimes these special rules are just reminders, I think, for rules, but often they are actually things that are unique to the scenario. So it might be, you know, the armoured cars can move 17 million hexes. Obviously, that's not what goes on here. But it's interesting to see what special rules they often come up with. So it's very important you read this sheet properly. And as I say, the victory conditions, both for the attacker and the defender, are key. There is no point reading the victory conditions and saying, I've got to get 6 victory points, and not realising that building blah, blah, blah are the ones that you need. Because no point being in 3 random buildings and thinking you've won the game. You've got to be in the correct buildings. And as the defender, you need to know that you don't want the attacker to be in those buildings. So quite interesting. I'm liking the look of that. And looking at it, it looks like the Slovakians go first, and they're the people who are effectively trying to get the victory points. And they also get some reinforcements on turn 2. So, yeah, that looks like a nice little fun scenario. It does have vehicles in, which could be a bit of a culture shock for new players. But you've got, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5... Right. Dear me, mental arithmetic's failed me. 16. About 26 counters, by the looks of it, roughly. The next scenario, I'm not going to go into great detail on it, is S45. This is also Poland on the 5th of September. And there's a load more counters there, but there's no guns. No vehicles, but there are guns. Yeah, you've got a machine gun, LMG, mortar, and the other guys got mortars as well. A few more counters there by the looks of it. That's 6 turns, and then the game ends, and everyone gets to play. It's looking interesting. And that's got only 2 bits about special rules. So, yeah, nice little introductory bits there. I can see this being a really good buy for almost any player. Now, I would still say, looking at this, that you are best buying Starter Kit 1 as your very first Starter Kit. However, if you don't really want to go out and buy Starter Kit 2 and 3 and everything, just buy this one. And to be honest, if you were to just start playing the game with just this kit, I don't think it would be a massive problem. So, you know, Starter Kit Expansion Pack 1 I think is really good. It's a little bit of a shame it doesn't come in a box with dice, but at the end of the day, does it really desperately matter? Most people can get their hands on 2 dice. I particularly like the mix of counters. I think you've got some really nice little extras here. And, you know, you've basically got almost every nation to play with, really. I mean, you've got the Commonwealth, the Americans, the Germans, the Russians, the Axis, and the Allied miners. Now, what's interesting about this kit is you've got quite a few Americans and Germans, but not much of the others. So if you like the idea of maybe playing with a few more Brits, obviously you can get for King and Country, but I think it was Starter Kit 3 came with quite a few Brit counters. I can't remember. Please go check that up on Board Game Geek. They normally have a shot of the counters. And the Commonwealth, or the British, they're kind of a pinky tan, more tan than pink, to be fair. The Russians are a kind of a greeny brown. The Americans are kind of a limey green. The Germans are kind of blue. The Axis miners are a kind of darkish, weird green. And the Allied miners are a very light green. So if you're a little bit colourblind, I could see it maybe being a bit of a problem. Oh, and I've just noticed there is a turn marker on this sheet. I can't recall if I had a turn marker on my Starter Kit 1. I seem to recall I nicked the one out of Beyond Valor for when I was demonstrating the game. Anyway, overall, enough waffling. I think this is a really good little product. I do recommend it highly. And I like this new rule book. It looks really nice, and I guess it's going to be my go-to reference for starter kits from now on. A couple of little bits in here which are new to me, obviously, because, as I say, most of my games so far have just been with infantry. I've deliberately avoided the complexity of tanks because of low ammo and bogging down and hidden emplacement. Ooh, yeah. Oh, that's for guns, yeah. Excellent. I'm looking forward to reading this and trying to get a game going. So I hope you've enjoyed my little live unboxing of Starter Kit. I hope that's also maybe explained a little bit about how ASL works. One thing I would say is, on the reference charts, you've got this thing called an IFT, the Infantry Fire Table, and that is the thing that I find you refer to a lot. There are some players out there who seem to have memorised this, and it's basically you look up your firepower for all your units firing, you roll your dice, and then you just cross-reference that. And, for example, a firepower of 4 on a dice roll of 4 is a 1 morale check. So you need to make a morale check, and you get a +1 on your dice roll, which means you're less likely to make the morale check. And if you fail, then you're going to rout. Then, of course, you get a desperation morale away and go and hide. So on these charts, I find you get morale checks quite a lot. Now, that might be because I've been taking shots that a more experienced player would not bother with. And if you look on here, if I cross-reference 2 versus 20, well, that's a 2 KIA, so that's a much nastier. That indicates that 2 randomly determined units are automatically broken or suffer casualty reduction if already broken. Oh, sorry, I misread that. I thought that didn't sound right. As many targets as the number indicated are eliminated, so 2 units in that hex are immediately eliminated. All other units in that hex are automatically broken or suffer casualty reduction if already broken. So, as you can see, lots of little twiddly bits there, and these are the bits that do catch you out and do give, I think, the game a little bit of a bad reputation. When I sit down and read the rules, think that this is an easy game. Then I sit down and play it, and my brain lets me down. And as I said in my previous segment on ASL, that's why I love the game. Lots and lots to think about, a fairly elegant game system, a little bit wonky in places, but which game system isn't? And I think it really does give you a really nice feel for World War II combat. And it's a well-loved product that's been around for over 25 years. Now, these starter kits, less than £30, get you in the game. Can't be wrong. Anyway, I hope that little extra for you has helped you get more of a feel for ASL if you're not aware of the product. And hopefully I've inspired you to go out and give it a go. Lots of really good utilities online. The tutorials are well worth looking at. There's some Flash training tutorials. I think there's even a Flash tutorial on the MMP website now. Lots of really good little resources out there. I personally recommend Board Game Geek. However, ASL, you know, tends to be supported more by things like Consim World and stuff, but I've really got a lot of time for the community on BGG, and I will probably be there talking about how much I love starter kits at some stage. Right, that will do. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I will catch you next time.